Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
Thank you for coming back to the IL Preps Podcast. I am Terry Foy, joined once again by Ty Zanders, and really excited to be talking about the 2019 recruiting issue. Last week, we talked about the 2021 rankings, we talked about Midnight Mania, and we talked about some of the early commitments. It's actually been a relatively low-key week in terms of commitments, so not a ton of news to cover on that front. A lot of visits scheduled. Make sure to check out social media as the trend of guys posting to Twitter and Instagram of their visits has increased, and it's been a cool little insight into, you know, both how some of these high-level recruits are you know, kind of weighing their options and how the landscape's going to unfold. But in the absence of things to discuss, we are targeting Monday, September 16th, to release the Power 100, the class of 2019 rankings. And Ty, before we jump into some of the specifics, can you talk about the class of 2019 in general, broadly, what they look like?
Yeah, I think I've definitely been guilty of ragging on them a little bit. And I think, like, to be clear, it's a class that, I don't think it's a poor class, but I look at the 18s and the 17s and the 16s and even looking ahead of the 20s, and I just don't see as much firepower. But I think that, especially a position like defense to me, and the faceoff position, I think, you know, those are two groups that I feel really good about in terms of, you know, guys making an impact, you know, early and then, you know, over the course of 3 or 4 years. So it's definitely a class that may not have as many, like, studs at attack and midfield, but some guys that will, you know, certainly contribute a whole lot. You know, I mean, starting with Connor Schellenberger, I mean, the number one recruit, you know, went wire to wire at that spot. So, you know, feel like he's someone who will be a game changer. May not be until sophomore year, as UVA still has guys like Kraus and Aitken that are seniors, but he definitely leads, you know, that group offensively.
So, yeah, I mean, certainly a lot going on in terms of this ranking. You know, last week we talked about the idea of a position breakdown and all sorts of stuff like that. How does that, you know, kind of manifest itself in this class?
Yeah, I mean, positionally, we try and get a list of like 50 to 70 guys at each position. And I think, you know, you and I have been talking about this. We're getting closer and closer to the point where we can almost just go to a top 100 offense, you know, ranking, because so much of it's interchangeable. I mean, I think people look at this
between attackman and
midi. Attack and midi, yeah. I mean, it's just, you know, I mean, how many times have we said the word, you know, the phrase positionless lacrosse, and that's becoming more and more prevalent. And I think that, you know, there are a lot of guys that were high school attackmen that we ranked in the midfield, you know, kind of talking to their future college coaches, and then vice versa. I mean, you know, you'll definitely see a lot more, you know, high school attackmen, guys who played, you know, attack in high school and the club circuit, that'll, you know, end up running out of the box, especially kind of early in their careers, just to get in the field, you know, kind of cycle them in and out. And, you know, I think we're going to see a whole lot more of that. And, you know, it's an interesting, you know, topic for sure.
But one of the things that's fascinating to me about that is that it feels like while this is probably, you know, around the pinnacle, maybe slightly beyond the peak of that idea, certainly it seems, you know, we've seen some commitments in either the class of 2020 or the class of 21 that suggests that, you know, having versatility among your midfielders is more important than having, you know, an alley dodger or a step down shooter or, you know, a facilitator from that midfield position. So, you know, I'm thinking about it just in the context of a guy like Machado Rodriguez, who is a face-off guy at Chaminade, but is really athletic and, you know, is committed to Yale and probably is going to be asked to fill a role where he's not specializing either as a D-midi or an offensive midi or a face-off guy. And that versatility seems like it's increasing in importance in the way that coaches are evaluating midfielders. So it is a fascinating pendulum swing, and certainly not every recruiter is going to go about it the same way, but, you know, at least something to be mindful of as we kind of move forward. But one of the other conversations that we had along these lines is separating out short stick D-middies, because, you know, they both in the way that coaches evaluate short stick D-middies and the role that they play when they get on campus. I think about it in the context of Drew Shantz. You know, he was a guy who was on the radar coming out of high school, but wasn't really in the conversation as an Under Armour All-American, for example. And then he was one of the best freshmen in the country his first year at Notre Dame. And it was because he was filling a role that just hadn't necessarily been emphasized or even, you know, kind of clearly delineated in the recruiting process. I think there are a couple of reasons for that. Number one, coaches don't necessarily want to tell a midfield recruit, you're going to be a D-middie here, unless he already is a D-middie in high school. And oftentimes, D-middies in high school aren't good enough lacrosse players to play high-end D1 lacrosse. So while they might be athletic enough, what you end up finding is, you know, these guys that go to top 15, 20 programs, you know, they kind of take the most athletic, least offensively skilled guy and turn him into a D-middie once he arrives on campus, at which point he, you know, is a little pot committed. So what's your regard for the idea of both ranking and, you know, how to identify D-middies through the process?
Yeah, I mean, we've definitely seen a general shift in, you know, a couple different things. And we talked about the shift of positionless lacrosse and all that. But I think that, you know, with the high school class of 2015, you know, which produced Shantz and, you know, Zach Goodrich, I think that, you know, in the last like 5 to 10 years, really, we've seen more love, you know, and glory for D-middies. And I think, you know, with that said, it's definitely made us look a little bit harder and realize that these guys are, you know, pretty pivotal, you know, members of their recruiting class and their roster. And we want to pay more attention to it. So, you know, I mean, to your point, there's definitely the kind of thing where, you know, we know who's a D-middie recruit, you know, because of our relationships with college coaches, but these kids may not necessarily think that, you know, that's the role they're going to play. So that's kind of why we haven't, you know, ranked them that way and pulled them out and done it the way we do with face-off guys. But, you know, to me, I mean, I look at like the rankings right now, I look at, you know, spots 38 to 50 in the midfield rankings. And there's a lot of, I mean, a lot of that is guys that I see, you know, either being a straight D-middy or, you know, a two-way guy. I mean, I look at, you know, a kid like Quinn Chambers and Eddie Glassmeyer going to Hopkins. I mean, that's the position that I feel like Hopkins, you know, bolstered the most in this class. You know, guys like Stevie Jones going to Villanova and Bear Lockshin at Princeton and Drew Brenfleck, you know, Virginia and Will Godine at Georgetown. I mean, that's a lot of D-middies right there that I feel really good about, you know, panning out to the next level. So, and guys that, you know, those coaches are very excited about. So, you know, yeah, you kind of have to pay attention to the kids that may not be as sexy, you know, offensively, you know, but bring lots to the table and are versatile and hard-nosed and will, you know, have a huge role, you know, in college.
Let's dive into these rankings in particular. You already mentioned Connor Schellenberger. He's the number one recruit in this class. He's been the number one recruit in this class. And I think it's, you know, for me, he's an interesting player to consider because I just can't get past the idea of comparing him to Ned Crotty. And the reason is because his primary athletic attribute is speed. I feel like they look similar on the field. When Connor Schellenberger runs, he kind of looks like he's skating the way that Ned Crotty did. But I know that that's not a very common comparison. I think that he's a really safe choice at number one because I can see him playing midfield and attack depending on what Virginia needs and how he fits in with his teammates. He's a really good shooter, both from mid-range with his feet set and on the run. You know, I would like to see a little bit more of him in terms of like as a facilitator and a feeder in order to kind of really seem like that ex-attackman. But at the same time, I probably would have said the same thing about Ned Crotty, not only coming out of high school, but also in his first 2 years when he was playing midfield for Duke. And then he turned into one of the best ex-attackmen that we've seen in the last 15 years. So I suppose with all that being said, how do you analyze Schellenberger in the, you know, recent past of number one recruits?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. I think that, you know, one, the rich get richer. I mean, Virginia has got, that's probably 3 or 4 kids on their roster that were number one recruits come out of high school or were number one recruits at one point, you know, earlier in their careers, like Matt Moore, you know, who was surpassed by Tahokan Anacoke. But, you know, with Schellenberger, I mean, yeah, I mean, he definitely compares well to, you know, the other kids before him. And, you know, I'm not expecting the same kind of splash as a freshman. But, you know, I think that I look at a kid like, you know, Joey Epstein, I think that that's a good comparison in the work ethic sense. And, you know, people rave about Epstein's work ethic, and I've heard the same, you know, level of praise about Schellenberger's work ethic, that he works his tail off, you know, and is very, very driven. And I think that, you know, that makes me feel as positive about someone panning out as, you know, the skill set itself. And I think that, you know, Schellenberger will definitely get in the field. And I think, you know, what makes him special is, or different also, is that he's not like, I like the Ned Crotty comparison, but I think that there's also some Donowski in him, you know, and ironically, you know, just because so much of his work is done above the goal, you know, and from the wings and getting to the middle of the field. And we saw that in the Under Armour game. And yeah, I mean, I don't have enough good things to say about him. And I think that the separation between him and the next offensive recruit in this class is pretty heavy.
Number two, Kenny Brower, a defenseman from Massapequa, going to Duke. I wrote the article in the issue about him, so I've got my explanation for why he's number two. But what's yours?
I mean, I went up to see him this spring, and he is just an animal. I mean, he's a lefty. He's mean. He comes from a really, you know, a lacrosse crazy town, a town that, you know, is very, very blue collar and tough and gritty, whatever you want to call it. And I think that he'll bring that to Duke, and you know, we'll be a player from day one, whether it's the fourth guy or the first guy off the bench or a starter, you know, kind of filling in for the graduation of Van Raphorst. I think very highly of Kenny, and he came back from his ACL injury as a junior and had a really good senior year, won a championship. You know, I saw him score a goal in the game I went to. He was a little banged up this summer, but yeah, he is special. And I think that when he was injured, we did something where I kind of kept him in the number two spot just to kind of illustrate that this kid is far and away the best defensive prospect in the class. Ended up doing the same thing with a kid, Jack Susan, in the 2020 class, going to Yale. But Brower is that good. And you know, as I said, it's a tremendous class defensively. I mean, we ranked 50 guys, and it felt like you could have ranked 60 or 70. It felt like guys that were, you know, 30 to 45 could have been 15 to 30 somewhere. I mean, it's a really good group, and Kenny is you know, definitely stands out, and he'll be one of five poles to head to Duke, you know, LSMD to come to Duke this year.
Who does he remind you of?
I'm not great at defensive comparisons, so I appreciate you putting me in the spot, but I'll have to think about that one. I mean,
well, I'll let you off the hook a little bit in this way. So he's really tall and really skinny, but he plays really strong, and there just aren't a lot of guys that like fit that mold for me. I mean, you know, this is just an outrageous comparison, but the tall, skinny player who it plays really strong that stands out in my mind is Brody Merrill. But like, Kenny is not as filled out as Brody, even. Yeah. You know, and I'm thinking about it in the context of what he looked like as a junior and senior in college. So, you know, but just like the idea of being 6'3", like 200, 205 pounds, but like as strong as he is, which is like able to be fully extended with his arms and his stick, and yet his stick is still moving the offensive player in a direction that he wants him to go, right? So this is like, you know, 8 feet away from his center of gravity, he's actually able to apply as enough pressure with his stick head to move a player. Like, that is a really, really strong human.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, this almost goes without saying, but, you know, lefty D guys are coveted because the majority of the kids out there are, of course, right-handed, although that's probably not going to be the case in the class of 20 and 21 because there's so many lefties. But the benefit of having a great lefty D guy as your number one or number two, I mean, that's huge. And Kenny will be able to, you know, provide that for Duke. But yeah, he's awesome. He's been fun to watch over the years after transferring from Kellenberg, you know, to Massapequa and kind of, you know, testing his mettle there. Yeah, I mean, big things ahead for him and that entire class.
The number three recruit and attackman from Hill Academy, Dyson Williams, son of an NFL legend, heading to Duke. Number four, Alex Tatakis, a faceoff specialist from Culver Military Academy in Indiana, heading to Denver to pick up the mantle that Trevor Baptiste set. And number five, Graham Bundy, a middie from MICDS in Missouri, heading to Georgetown, the son of a legendary Carolina player. There's a lot to be unpacked there, but one of the things that's interesting to me is just the idea of Georgetown getting a highly touted player. You know, obviously they're coming off of two consecutive NCAA tournament appearances, and Kevin Warren seems like his program is really angling to be the team to beat in the Big East.
Yeah, and I agree. I think that, you know, and I wrote this, you know, somewhere in the last couple of days, but, you know, the two classes that are headed to Georgetown, you know, one that's currently on campus, and then, you know, the group next year. I mean, they're off the charts. I mean, off the charts talented. I remember sitting next to an assistant in the Big East, and he was saying, he's like, can you start writing about these Georgetown commits and get them away from the Hoyas? You know, because I do not want to play them these next couple of years. And we kind of laughed about that. And a lot of coaches were just kind of, you know, praising Georgetown and you know, what Coach Warren and Coach Phipps and Coach Shriver have built. And I think that there used to be a time where they really, like, they got poached often, you know, and that's because they weren't, you know, doing as well in the spring, and now they have that success. You know, they really lined up a lot of recruits like Bundy and James Donaldson, who we'll get to, a number eight recruit, a D guy from Brother Rice in Michigan. But Bundy is someone who they're going to have to rely on, you know, tremendously, and I think that they'll need him to kind of be the guy, and he can be the guy, given that he's a two-way kid, athletic. He's a worker. I mean, the guys in the U19 staff just raved about Bundy, and you know, I'll rave about Bundy too. I mean, just talking to him for his story, I mean, he is a really, really impressive kid. You know, talking to Andy Kay, his coach at MICDS, he's just talking about how, you know, Graham's the kind of kid that, you know, unsolicited, he sends a video message to, you know, Coach K's daughters, you know, wishing them a happy birthday, stuff like that. I mean, you know, pretty special stuff, and certainly something that, you know, the Georgetown coaches, that entire program will love to have. Just a really good kid and really good player who I think that they'll lean on, you know, a good amount. But it's cool to kind of see, you know, Denver and Georgetown, you know, Princeton, Cornell, Ohio State. I mean, a lot of different schools represented. You know, at one point I felt like there was a lot of Virginia and Duke in the rankings for a couple of years because those classes are pretty stellar. But, you know, there's a lot of diversity here. You have Michigan, you have Penn. I mean, a lot of schools in the top 25, you know, representation. So pretty cool, but definitely good things to come for Georgetown and what they have with these next two classes.
The other kind of element of this Power 100 that I want to get to is a couple of the high risers, guys who weren't ranked as highly in this version of the rankings last year as they ended up being in the final rankings prior to setting foot on campus. And the first guy I want to spotlight is number 10 midfielder Stanley English, also from Culver, heading to Princeton, and has drawn a fair amount of comparisons, for obvious reasons, to Zach Currier, a kind of do-it-all middie from Culver that headed to Princeton. That's high praise.
Yeah, it is, and it is kind of a natural comparison. I think that and Jake Stevens, who's another Culver kid at Princeton, who got a lot of time and played really well for the Tigers last year as a D-middie. So English, I think, the world of. I think he's someone that is another, you know, super athletic grinder, you know, has that box background, as you could probably guess. And, you know, at one point I felt like he was, you know, maybe the best player that I saw in March. You know, there was a lot of lacrosse that I was able to see in March with this non-conference, you know, swing. And I thought that English was like the senior that stood out the most because he just did so much. And he was always kind of at the end of every play and great in transition and another worker. I know his dad is, you know, runs a gym in Canada and used to be in the CFL, Canadian Football League. I think he was a receiver, I want to say. But English, yeah, just got exponentially better. He was D-middie as a junior and just an absolute horse as a senior. And I expect the same, you know, for him at Princeton. But, yeah, English is excellent. There's a lot of guys that rose up, you know, a good amount. But feel, you know, very good about English the next level.
Number 16, a faceoff specialist from Smithtown West, heading to Maryland. Connor Calderon had a great USU 19 team tryout, among other impressive elements of his, kind of recent past. What do you like about Calderon?
He's tough. You know, he's tough. He's a little guy, but he doesn't play small. You know, I mean, he's, I think that's like the only, you know, real knock on him is that, you know, can he, stay healthy and battle against these bigger guys in a really physical league like the Big Ten? And I'm inclined to say, you know, yes, otherwise we wouldn't put him in the 16th spot. But Calderon just doesn't really lose. I mean, I remember, you know, going to see him play in that little Long Island swing that I made with Dan Aber in April. And he didn't lose a faceoff against Ward Melville, you know, defending national champions, until the third or fourth quarter. And, you know, really allowed his team to put a stranglehold on that game because of the possessions. And, yeah, I mean, he's excellent and, you know, very seldom lost during the U19 trial process. And I think that, you know, it's hugely beneficial to kind of have that 1-2 punch for any team, but especially in a league like the Big Ten. I think for Calderon to be able to, you know, form a tandem with a kid like Justin Shockey, I think will bode very well for the Terps. But yeah, Calderon is a special player, and think very highly of him and this faceoff class as a whole.
And then the last one that I wanted to touch on, number 26 attackman heading to Notre Dame, Patrick Kavanaugh from Chaminade out of New York, but he did a PG year at Taft. The brother of Matt Kavanaugh, I would imagine that folks are familiar with him and that. What do you have to say about the second in this lineage?
Yeah, I mean, he shot up there as well. You know, I think, the third in this lineage is brother Brennan's an MLL All-Star and plays for the Denver Outlaws.
Oh, you're right. I'm sorry.
You know, and then Chris Kavanaugh, who we have is a five-star in the 21 class who just transferred from Chaminade to Taft. So it's a remarkable, you know, lacrosse family. And I think, you know, the similarities there, at least we can say that about, you know, Matt and Brendan and Patrick, is that they all got, you know, they're almost late bloomers. And I think that, you know, there's no doubt that more eyes were on a kid like Brendan or Patrick because of, you know, what Matt was able to do, you know, whether it be at Hotchkiss, U19s or at Notre Dame in the pros. But, you know, with Patrick, he shot up there and he worked his tail off. And you know, I like what he could do as a senior at Chaminade, but you saw what he was able to provide, you know, for Taft during his PG year, teaming up with Tate Young from the midfield, you know, a Long Island Express teammate who's now with him at Notre Dame. But Kavanaugh, you know, and as you can probably imagine, he rides hard, you know, because he's a Kavanaugh. He's tough, and he turns the corner well. I mean, there are a couple games where he had two or three goals during the U19 tryout process. I think that I would like to see him kind of become a little more consistent, but like what he can do, I can see him getting some time. I mean, a pretty loaded class for Notre Dame, especially, I mean, on both sides of the ball, but it'll be interesting to see kind of what he's able to do if he can get in there early. But, you know, I'm also a big fan of Cav there.
So the last thing I want to talk about is what you just led into on Friday, September 20th, we will debut online the top 20 2019 class rankings. But those of you who have gotten an opportunity to take a look at the print or digital edition already know. And those of you who haven't seen, you are going to hear the top five now as we discuss them. So you just mentioned Notre Dame. They are number two. We talked pretty extensively about Duke's incoming group, mentioning Kenny Brower and Dyson Williams. They are number one. Number three is Yale, number four is Virginia, and number five is Maryland. Just, you know, obviously these are rankings that you kind of crafted and had a lot of input in, but what do you find interesting about that order of the top five?
Yeah, I mean, I guess just to start, I mean, I remember you and I had a pretty long discussion kind of trying to decide, you know, who was one to five, you know, one to four, and we felt like everyone was kind of on equal footing, or felt that way, and it was pretty tough to decipher. But, you know, with Duke, it's an interesting class. I mean, again, they have five D guys coming in. You know, I still adore this class, but it almost looked better a couple of years ago. I think there were a couple of kids offensively that, you know, cooled off on a little bit. But knowing that it's a program that is known for developing talent and getting the most out of those guys and kind of, you know, polishing their fundamentals and getting them ready for spring, I feel like that's a group that will have that depth and have a lot of guys contribute. But adore that class and feel the same about Notre Dame. Notre Dame is loaded, and you know, I wrote this in the magazine, but you know, what a nice position you know, for Chris Wojcik and Ryan Wallner to step into. You know, certainly an adjustment for that staff, that program, to make in many ways, losing Jerry Byrne and then, you know, Neil Hutchinson and Matt Carwick in back-to-back years. But you know, I think that is a group that is deep, is well-rounded. It has a goalie that I can see, you know, being the starter this year, at least pushing Matt Schmidt for time, and Liam Entman, and then a number of D guys, whether it's Jonathan Ford, LSM, Marco Napolitano, a fellow Torrey Pines product close, Max Schallett, kind of a swingman, a lot of talent in that group. And then, you know, Yale, this group is excellent. You know, BJ Berlace is a top 10 player. He's a great LSM in the middle of the field. And then they have a number of players that I think, you know, can also kind of impact that middle of the field. Guys like Jack Montfort and Pat Hackler. You know, Griffin Wilson will be a good midi for them, you know, coming off injury. They get probably their most highly touted goalie, you know, prospect, you know, in Jared Paquette. And then his teammate, Mikey Alexander, is someone that I think we had as maybe the 16th D guy in the class. But, you know, talking to those U19 staff, they think that he's one of the better guys in the class. and was just remarkable at U19 tribe process. So, you know, Yale and then Virginia. Virginia, this is a really, really strong group defensively. And some guys I can see make an impact offensively. And the sleeper there is Bienkowski, who is an Army prep and is an Isla product, who I think was all Long Island as a senior. I think he's a sleeper in that group. But really good D class between Quentin Matsui, Scott Bauer, and Jake Giuliani. So I see that group, you know, make an impact pretty early. And then, you know, Maryland. We've talked about Calderon, but I think between him and Logan McEnany, really solid up the middle. And then just a number of kids I can see contributing, you know, whether it be attack or midfield. I know talking to Coach Tillman, they have a lot of guys that were natural attackmen that will be playing, be running out of the box, you know, an awful lot. And especially some also some good D middies as well, guys like Dawson Wynn, two-way guy. You know, Garrett Gibbons is a good one. Michael Mines, some good D middie talent for the Terps.
Well, Ty, that'll do it for this edition of the IL Preps podcast. If you like what you heard, leave a rating and review. Subscribe on whatever platform it is that you listen to. Hit us up on social media. He's at Ty Zanders. I'm at Terrence Foy. Follow at IL Preps on Twitter and Instagram. And we'll be back next week to talk about the Class of 2020 rankings and any commitment news that unfolds over the course of the next 7 days. As always, thanks for the listen. Tell a friend, and we'll be back next week.
Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.